Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. Today's show marks the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq. But who was he?
Today's show marks the week in which Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq was martyred. But who was he? Ja'far as-Sadiq was born in 702 CE in Medina. A descendant of Prophet Muhammad, he is the sixth Shia Imam and one of the most highly respected individuals in Islam. All 12 Shia Imams are regarded as having full knowledge of all sciences, but it seems that by Ja'far as-Sadiq's time, the circumstances were such that his teachings gained more attention and interest. His lectures and famous debates with atheists attracted a great deal of attention. The Encyclopedia Britannica describes him as being undoubtedly both politically astute and intellectually gifted. One of his students was Jabir, widely recognized as the father of chemistry. But Ja'far as-Sadiq and his followers were persecuted, as were those who shared the same ideology before him. He was martyred in 765 CE. He had been poisoned by Abbasid Caliph Al-Mansur. Ja'far as-Sadiq's burial site is visited throughout the year, every year, by Muslims at Jannat al-Baqi in Medina.
Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq was respected and very well respected to all the schools, from the Sunni to the Shia tradition, and this is something which is quite important. Why was he so respected, and what was his contribution to the Islamic classical thoughts? And the way he was also dealing with all these fields, he was a Muslim scholar, of course, but at the same time he was interested in all the fields of philosophy, sciences, and he was a teacher, he was active, and at the same time very committed to protect diversity within his own community as a leader, as a thinker, and as someone who was promoting debates within the Muslim community. So for us today, there are lessons that we can draw out of his life for us to understand in which way we have to deal with diversity. So let us come back to who he was, and at the same time come after this to a discussion about what are the lessons that we can draw for our time, and in which way we can use his example to promote something which is a spirit dealing with diversity and pushing debates and rational criticism, which are constructive in a way we are dealing with the scriptural sources. To discuss this subject, I'm joined by Sheikh Imran Ali Bandwani, who is a lecturer and researcher at the Center for Islamic Shia Studies. So thank you for being here. Let me just start with this simple question. Who was he exactly, and in which way we have to understand his life?
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for the opportunity. Well, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq was obviously the son of Imam Muhammad Baqir, the fifth Shia Imam, and according to Shias, obviously he was the next successor to the fifth Imam. But according to Muslims in general, he was known as a very renowned scholar, leader, theologian, ethicist, scientist. Why? Because he taught so many students who have actually carried on his work, showing the sort of diverse scholar that he was. So you have Abu Hanifa, Malik bin Anas, who are students of him, Jabir bin Hayyan, known as Jabir in the sort of Western field, who's the great chemist. So you find that he was a very diverse scholar, very pious man, and I think a great symbol of scholarship and piety for Muslims.
Yeah, let me start with this, because I think it was important. Before even scholarship, he was known as someone who was very spiritual.
Yes.
Very committed. Yes. It was said that he was, you know, praying during the night and having something which is isolating himself. So there is something which is the first dimension, which is his commitment to God before commitment to sciences was quite important. And I think for today, because it may be in fact that his relationship to God and this very specific way of dealing with God helped him to deal with people in the way he was dealing with diversity.
Yes.
So I think that the first point that you are making is quite important. And then the second point, which is also important, is that he was teaching, you know, very renowned Sunni scholars, and you mentioned Abu Hanifa and Malik and others, but these were very important at the beginning, because we are here dealing with the first century of the Islamic history. So why do you think that it was possible for someone who then became the sixth imam in the Shia tradition to be the teacher of the Sunni scholars?
I think that is down to his personality, actually. We find that, first of all, he studied under Imam Zainul Abidin, his grandfather, and then obviously his father, Al-Baqir alayhi salam. So you find that he was able to draw upon the spiritual traditions of the fourth Imam, which are shown in As-Sahif As-Sajjadiyya, as well as the intellectual rigor of the fifth Imam. Now, I personally think that prepared him to have a very open mind in the way that he encouraged diversity, debate and scholarship. So he saw no contradiction in encouraging this diversity. There was another school of thought developing, another Wasil bin Atta, for example, the Mu'tazilite sort of founder. So I think that it was in his personality not to ban people, to encourage diversity, to encourage learning. So I don't think he saw contradiction in diversifying knowledge, if that answers the question.
Yes, it is. I also think that for the students, for example, Abu Hanifa and Malik, it's quite important from where they were as Sunni to listen to someone they were respecting as a scholar beyond the schools, meaning that it is that he was able to have a teaching which is relying on the Quran and relying on the Prophet, peace be upon him. And this is something which is quite important. Very often we have it in the Quran, come back to the Quran and come back to the Prophet, peace be upon him, if you want to go beyond the vision. Yes. And he was able to do this. So the quality of his teaching, the knowledge of the Quran, the knowledge of the Sunni, the Sunnah, and also the Sunni tradition, made him able to be acknowledged and recognized as a great teacher and a great scholar by people who were not following his very specific, or not understanding that they were following a very specific school of law. So I would say that this is quite important, because it's really important to understand how students were able to listen to him.
Yeah, I think because, you see, he approached the teaching of Islam in a very universal way. I mean, there are many hadith I can quote in Al-Kafi, Bihar, Al-Anwar. People ask him, what does it mean to be created? What is the difference between God and man? And he was able to unite people on the base of this rationalistic and analytical tendencies, but imbibed with the spiritual sort of understanding of reflection. And these are very universal things. He did not say, well, okay, you only have to become a jurist, you only have to emphasize one aspect of knowledge. He emphasized, I think, basic modes of thinking, which everybody respected. He says, wow, somebody can actually think like that, and I'm going to learn from these faculties and develop these faculties.
Yes.
I think that was the secret of how he did it.
I think that what we can add to this is that the way he was relying on the Quran and the Sunnah, through this universal dimension of the scriptural sources, helped him to understand that we have to deal with a diversity of sciences. And this is exactly the opposite of what sometimes we see today, is that come back to the Quran, it's as if it's the exclusive science, no other things to think about, and you will find everything there. No, it's the source of everything, but not everything is there. You can it's a light that you can use, and this is the way he was also dealing with this. So let me carry on this, because in these different sciences, what was the key factor that helped him to deal with all these sciences, from the universality of his take, but the means that he was using? Because you were referring to the Mu'tazila. I think that there is a key factor of reason and rationality here.
I think in accordance with the hadith of Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, quoting Ghurar al-Hikam and other sources, I think he took that the Quran, as you said, wasn't just a final book in terms of its literal interpretation, but it was a reminder to exercise our inner prophet of thinking. I think that was his philosophical approach. So he did not regard it as, well, the Quran says this.
A closed world.
This is the first thing. The second thing, in terms of encouraging diversity, I think that he saw that there were many sects and different types of thinking opening up at that time. Now, in order to be able to keep the Islamic sort of fundamentals, if you will, he had to be able to communicate a message based on godliness, based on piety, and based on evolving the sciences, because he could see that now we find scholars emerging. Now, this you can say is philosophical and theological. What was the wisdom of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in giving leaders of humanity up to a certain point, prophet and imam, and then somewhat stopping or allowing scholars to emerge, allowing human beings to use that, use these sources and develop humanity. So I think that it was the wisdom of the sixth Imam to encourage average human beings to become scholars and take that lantern and try to evolve the Islamic sciences. These are, I think, the two approaches that he used.
Yes, and I would say that relying on the Quran and the Sunnah in through this universal window, that this is universal, and at the same time the means, which is rationality, is universal. That you can talk to everyone from the people who are Muslims from different trends to the atheists, to the philosophers, so was able to deal with this, and also being someone who was a precursor of anything which has to do with the Mu'tazila who came afterward. So I think that the means was universal as well as the references, and then being able to deal with this very specific universality with diversity. And once again, if we look at what is happening now, and we'll talk about this, but I think that this is something that we can just we need to come back to these dimensions. So in which way, for example, rationality is a key means and factor in his in his not only philosophy, because he was dealing with philosophy, but also with the Islamic tradition.
Well, I can just quote a hadith actually, just to sort of give an answer to that. Actually, this is to do with philosophy. Somebody asked him, "What is your proof that you have a creator?" And this is quoted in Kitab al-Tawheed done by Sheikh Saduq. And the sixth Imam says, I have found myself before two ideas. Either I have created it, or other than me has created it. If I had created it, then I would be before two ideas. Either I created it, and it was existent, surely it would be in no need of its creator because of its existence. Or it was non-existence. Surely you know that the non-existence cannot create anything. So the third idea has been proved, which is that I have a creator who is Lord of the worlds. As to how he used rationality, I mean, you can see in that.
Yes.
He was able to take the revelation as something real, as something essential, as something authentic. There is a Lord of the worlds. Number two, he was able to put that in a rational framework. This is how he used aql, not discarding revelation. Applying it in the way that you and I think of creation today. I see a tree, I see its limitations. I see me, I see my limitations. Can you see the framework developing? Allah, limitations, creation, distinction between the two. And he was able to put that in a framework. So I think, to answer your question, the role of aql or intellect was as a way to harmonize revelation and human thinking.
Yes, and I think that once again, saying this is also between religion and philosophy, that he was able to deal with the two fields by saying, I'm not forgetting the revelation when it comes, when I come to philosophy, but I'm not forgetting philosophy and rationality. And what you were saying here is also about logic. It's logic. I'm not, you know, it's not because I say God that I'm forgetting logic. So this is also something which is being able to use both, and this is something that as a Shia'i or Sunni we have to come back, because this is the common point of being Muslims, is really revelation and rationality, logic, and all this is al-aql wa al-naql, which is a naql, which are the texts, and the aql, which is the intellect that we have to use. And add to this what we were saying before, because I really think that the spiritual dimension, and you know, he was connected to the Naqshbandi, and he was talking to them, and part of the whole tradition, as some people were saying, that he was close to this teaching, and then the trend of being trying to educate his own heart at the same time using this. So all these dimensions, is there something else that you think we can add to his contribution to the Islamic history?
Significantly, especially linking it today. I personally think that Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam should be a symbol of unity and encouragement of scholarship today, which is exactly how it was in history. A symbol of unity for Muslims, despite what sect you are, you can come back to basic fundamentals of Islam and unite and learn together and develop humanity. Number two is, and I think this is a hole, if you like, that we suffer from, is that we tend to emphasize only one science, such as jurisprudence today, being a, for example, faqih, or emphasizing a particular line of interpretation. Whereas, what about the ethicist? What about the scientist? What about the philosopher? What about the historian? These are things, if you look, as I'm sure you know, that expertise in these disciplines is significantly lacking. We do not have an applied ethical framework. It doesn't exist. If today I want to develop something in bioethics, medical ethics, somebody is going to university today and encountering a number of experiences. How do we use ethics? Ethics developed by Tusi, Isfahani, Ghazali and Naraki and apply it. Now, that's where you should go back to 6th Imam and say, how did he do it? So his relevance in Islamic history is that, is encouragement of that, and I think we should use him as a symbol, as a flag today, to encourage others to unite.
Yes, I think starting by reminding the people that he was respected by all the scholars from the two main traditions, yes, in the Sunni and the Shia. Let me say something about the symbol of unity, because I think that what you are saying here, it's really important, is a mindset, is an attitude, is the way to be trying to be with God and understanding that there is only one way to deal with people is to acknowledge diversity.
Yes.
To deny diversity will lead us towards divisions. And this is the problem that we have with many Muslims. We waste the whole Ramadan saying that we are not starting together. But it's not going to happen. It's not going. Yes. We are not going to start together because we have different legal decisions and opinions on this.
Yes.
But the wisdom that is coming from Ja'far al-Sadiq, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, is really about this.
Yes.
Diversity is there. So you have to acknowledge this, your students as well as your the other Muslim scholars, the fellow Muslim scholars, is that something which is important. So the symbol of unity is teaching us the way to manage diversity and to deal with it.
Yes.
This is something which is what you were saying, the first teaching. Let me come to the second, because I want you to add something on this, which is he was able, because this was the knowledge of his time, he was able to gather all this knowledge, dealing with many fields. The problem that we have today, and this is what we see with Muslim scholars and the highest level, the shuyukh, the imams, is that the problem, Emma, even that we are talking about, is that it's very difficult to get all this knowledge in one person. It was, he was able to do this, but now to know about economy, to know about medical sciences, to know about this. So we have something which is, he was an authority in all this, dealing with a diversity of people and a diversity of fields. How do you see this today? How can we do this? Because what you are saying is very important, that we need to add knowledge to knowledge. The Quran is the source, but it's not the final knowledge of everything when it comes to human sciences and experimental sciences. How do you see this?
Well, why not let us encourage building up expertise in different fields? I mean, we are still taking from him. Maybe, as you rightly said, it's difficult to find one person with all this kind of knowledge. But why not develop somebody who is in expertise in economics and who's an ethicist or a faqih, a jurist, and we develop that group. Now, perhaps you and I know it's very difficult even for such people to come together. But I think that that's the only way where we acknowledge, well, I'm afraid you're an expertise in sort of relationship and citizenship, I'm an expertise in this, and I think it's our moral attitude, that's the key thing. And you find in his private life, the way Imam Ja'far Sadiq handled backbiters and oppressors, it's amazing. I mean, I find myself guilty of looking at his works, because I find that how was he able to be the subject of great oppression, and then suddenly he goes to the prayer mat and he does such dances, I'm going to pray for this dear brother. Now, I think it's about cultivating moral attitude, actually. Maybe less so about encouraging diversity of scholarship in a way. We have to say, well, okay, I acknowledge in my humility that Tariq Ramadan is an expert in this, for example. And you acknowledge maybe in the same in me. I think that's the first thing, maybe the greatest lesson we can learn from the 60 months.
Yes, I think that there is something which is important. That's true. Every time, it's not only in the field of trance and religious disputes, it's also dealing with politics. He was trying to avoid this and coming back to what is helping me to be at peace, first. Second, to try to avoid divisions. So sometimes just to be far from all this and just to show, to lead the people towards the essential. So this is the way he was, and I think that you are right by saying that it's an attitude, it's a way you deal with God. You know, you have priorities, but I think that there is one point which is still important. If we want this to be translated into the field of sciences, it also has to do with power. Because the problem that we have is that very often we come with religious knowledge and say, this is where the power of the religious power lies, and this is where he was not like this.
No, he wasn't.
Religion is important, it's the essential, this is the light, but we have to show respect to all the other sciences. So he was dealing with scholars, not only with people who had a second class level of knowledge and saying this is religion. So I think that this respect is quite important, and it may be that in our time the problem is really to acknowledge the fact that yes, we need experimental sciences and medical sciences, and we need Islamic ethics in all these sciences. Yes. All the work that I have been trying is really following in the footsteps of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq in this, is that we need all these sciences. Yes, if we are not dealing with all these sciences, we will always be behind all the sciences, and we will complain that we don't get the answers for our time. So I think that the point is connecting this mindset with translation to the world. And also something which is quite important, I want you to add about this, is that he was also able to go beyond the Muslims, to be able to talk to others. So so in which way also today we can draw lessons from that?
I think number one, in his moral attitude, that he was first and foremost a godly person and a humanitarian.
Yes.
And number two, that he wasn't an exclusive person in the way that he encouraged others to his moral acts or to Islam, which I find very interesting, in the sense it's about relationship and dress and acting with others. Now, these might be very simple things. You and I are dressed in suits, for example. We are talking in a particular way. Now, but in his speech, in the way that he gave gifts, in the way that he gave gifts to the poor in secret, you know, these are very, there's a maslaha, there's a wisdom in the way that he dealt with people. Hmm. Whereas at times we may emphasize, this is for a Muslim organization only. This is a charity for Islam and the Islamic cause.
Hmm.
I do not see that in any of the hadith or any of the narrations in the sixth Imam.
Hmm.
He was poor, so he gave.
Hmm.
He acted in a way that people understood him.
But so let me add something to this and ask you a question. With all this, and we know that we can, you know, he was following in the footsteps of the Prophet, peace be upon him. So these are qualities that he had. And still, he faced oppression and he was jailed.
Yeah.
Why?
People feared him. People feared that he was going to revolutionize society and destabilize what was a custom or a standard. Just as people feared the Prophet, that the Prophet wanted to bring Tawheed, a godly message, a moral message, but people feared, no, my commercial standing and the commercial government and my money would all go away. And I think it's a xenophobic attitude, that my lifestyle, which is a comfort for me, not a comfort for God, a comfort for me, would be destabilized. I think maybe that's the innate human psychology and fear that we always feel.
But I would say that, you know, we are always saying this about the prophets, peace be upon them, saying that, you know, they were coming with truth and wisdom, and still they faced, you know, oppression and people not ready to listen. Not only to listen to the truth, but being scared about their own power, because this was the point.
Yes.
And you have here Ja'far al-Sadiq living in a society, coming with all these qualities, trying to serve the people, avoiding divisions, changing the minds, changing the perceptions, acting for more rationality, more intellect, more debates, and then he was oppressed, and he was oppressed. And for us today, it's something which is really important. It's not because we are good that we are going to face good people or good destiny. It's always very difficult. And I think that this moral lesson, from spirituality to jihad, which is facing and to take effort to face this oppression, is something which is important. A final word on that?
I personally think that we should take lessons from the sixth Imam, and when we find oppression, we should go back to improving ourselves and not to accuse or fight with the other person, just as the example of backbiting I gave. I pray that I can learn from that.
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion, once again, we came back to this anniversary of his martyrdom, because it's quite important to understand who he was and what he gave, not only coming to the prophets, because at the end of the day, the prophets are our examples, and it is said in the Quran, but people also who are following in the footsteps of the prophets and trying their best, when you have someone who was able to be respected by all the traditions, the Sunni and the Shia, for our times, it's essential. Why? Because he was first a spiritual man, he was a godly man, he was praying and fasting and trying to be close to God, and this is the spiritual dimension that sometimes we are forgetting. And then with this spirituality he was able to be very, very rational, very, very logic, and using his mind and intellect to deal with people and to promote all the fields of knowledge. And for today it's quite important to understand that yes, the Islamic sciences are important, but all the sciences, all knowledge is useful if you want to go back to God and try to go beyond this. And one last lesson is that you are going to face, you know, criticism and oppression, and this has to do with perseverance, patience, and coming back to the essential with God. Well, that's all we have time for. Next week I shall be asking the question, what can Muslims do for Western politics? Let me know if you have any questions about that. Email me at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. That's islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. I would like to thank my guest, Sheikh Imran Ali Banjwani, and I hope to see you next week. Insha'Allah.